95 Minutes of Gary Hooper brings you
Phoenix City.
Hello and welcome to Phoenix City. I am joined by a full cast. Hello, guys.
Hi.
Good evening.
That was very Barry White.
You're welcome.
You ruined it all.
I've just thrown you, that's all.
Yeah, I know. But so we should probably just start with the next game. Up in Eden Park, 7:15 on a Saturday. It was a good 3 points.
Yeah, yep. Very good 3 points.
Especially as any three points are good 3 points.
Correct.
But against
I don't know that it necessarily was a very good performance, but the 3 points were excellent.
It was an entertaining game to watch.
For sure.
Yeah.
I thought that they for a game that was kind of had a fair number of chances for them, none of them were really, really guilt-edged ones that went begging, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I disagree. You mean for City or for us?
For City.
I disagree. There was first 10 minutes of the second half, they had 5 shots, 3 of which were good saves by Marinovic. Yeah. They could easily have been goals.
But they weren't, you know, basically inside the box, you know, should be scored sort of things. There was a hint of speculation about them.
There was one that he saved with his foot that probably should have been scored. That's probably the guilty chance. I'd say City would have deserved a couple of goals out of that, looking at the sheer number of opportunities they had and the saves that Marinovic had to make, particularly towards the start of the second half. I think they would have deserved a couple of goals.
I don't think anyone would disagree that if it had finished 1-1.
Or even 2-1 to them. I think it's interesting you talk about the start of the second half because they did have some good chances there, but I think some of their best chances came in the first half from just terrible mistakes from us. We gave away a lot of ball that gave them really promising position on the field that they really didn't turn into much, but I would have said they probably should have. A team as good as they are should have capitalized on that within the first 20 minutes. We gave them not just one, but several really good chances in our half.
There was at least one where Jamie McLaren was through to goal.
Yeah.
And he's just screwed up his control enough that defenders have got back and his shot has been quite tame that Marinovic has covered it. So I think actually that might be a good place to start. Where Marinovic's distribution with his feet was quite poor.
Yeah, he was off. His whole game was off, realistically.
Yeah. Stopping was all right, but from a
stopping, I mean, it was functional, but I didn't think that compared to the rest of his season, I don't think it was as good.
I think his shot stopping was as good as it has been all season. I think it's the other aspects of the game that were the problem today, this weekend.
They were more of a problem, but the shot stopping.
Absolutely, but I think on the shot stopping thing, like he made the saves, but he didn't look as confident about them. And you know, I think it was the one he won save of the round for.
The one where he got the hard hands.
Yeah, arguably you should be tipping that over the bar. It certainly shouldn't be bouncing back into play in what would potentially be a very dangerous position. It didn't work out that way, but I think it's the sort of stuff we haven't seen from Marinovic, where he's making saves that just bounce back into those dangerous positions and that kind of stuff. You know, he was still making the save, but he didn't look like his usual self when he was doing it, he's still a step above a lot of keepers we've seen in the A-League for sure, even on a bad day, but
his
distribution was equal with some of the worst we've seen in the A-League.
He was in the team of the week, which is quite an exaggeration. I think it says more about the other teams than it does about our performance in itself. Yeah.
Well, and it was a shorter round as well. There were
only four games.
Yeah, only four games. Five. Yeah.
But it wasn't just Marinovic, right?
No,
distribution-wise. There was Cam Devlin, Steinman, De Vere. They all had really poor giveaways in midfield. And to be honest, it was like the first 20 minutes was just, hey, let's give it back to them and see if they'll come at us again. You know, it was several opportunities in there, all on our own.
It was weird stuff that we just haven't seen from us before this season. I mean, we've certainly seen that sort of stuff from the Phoenix of old, but this season we haven't seen that creeping in at all. And it seemed to be that, as you say, you know, all of that kind of defensive group just decided that this was the 20 minutes where they were going to put in the worst passes, leave it short, kick it straight out, you know, shank a clearance. And it was just all at the same time. It was bizarre to watch, But we scrambled well enough, we didn't end up conceding. So there's a small amount of praise to be given that even when we were doing that, we were doing enough to scramble and cover it as well. Yeah, which
much better without the ball than with it.
Yeah, which was a bit of a problem considering how much ball we had. Mm. I mean, you think about all those turnovers, and I still think we more than edged.
63% for the first half, I think it was. Yeah, it came back a lot in the second half, but we still edged it over the course of the match. Mm. But yeah, we absolutely dominated possession in that first half. It didn't feel like it. From where I was watching, it did not feel like we were dominating possession.
Oh, there was a lot of imagination. There was a lot of horizontal passing.
There was, and I'm okay with that because
yeah, me too.
You're looking trying to find opportunities, waiting for runs. Oh, that's normal part of football, right? I'm okay with that, but it still didn't feel like we had a lot of the ball, mainly because City felt like they were more potent with what they had.
Yep. Whenever they gained possession, they were coming forward. You were seeing them react a lot more than what we were doing when we were just sitting on the ball.
Yeah, and I think part of that as well was us trying to work back in the game after we'd had that really shaky 20 minutes. And I think if you were to look at territory rather than possession, it would tell a very different story because there definitely was a period there when we got the ball, we realized we'd been screwing it up entirely. And we were like, let's just get some touches in, and we're working around in our own half. I don't think I would necessarily say we were looking for opportunities. We were just looking to get some touches on the ball, you know, get everyone going. Actually, we can play football. Let's get some confidence back in this and let's, you know, settle. And I think they spent a good period there sitting in their own half and not really even looking to work it forward, just trying to settle it down again and get those nerves out that were clearly causing some trouble.
What was the surface like there? Because I sort of thought I heard something on the commentary about it being a bit slick.
So what you heard was the captain of Melbourne City having a chat to the referee while they were waiting for Stephen Taylor to come over after the team photo. And he was I didn't hear what he said the first thing. I watched the replay this morning. So, but he said now about the surface, and he was complaining to the ref prior to kickoff about the surface because obviously they'd had a Super Rugby game on there the night prior.
Someone said, what's wrong with the grass at one point, which was definitely picked up over the effects. I mean, I don't think it was a particularly bad surface, but I think obviously having had Super Rugby on it and then two games of football back to back, my suspicion would be simply that they left the grass a bit long. That would be if you were the groundsman and you were wanting to protect your surface from a rugby game and two football games basically back to back. Smart thing to do is you leave it a little long. Now, that is definitely going to affect the football more than it's going to affect any of the rugby.
Yeah, rugby, they want it slightly longer. Apparently, it's better to have it slightly longer for rugby. But football, obviously, short means nice, fast surface.
Yeah, and so I suspect it was probably a bit of that. And it's not traditionally a football ground either. So I suspect when they're picking, because, I mean, there's different turf you can be using for your grounds and all that sort of stuff. I'm pretty sure that football is very low on their list of things that they're caring about for that.
The surface, like when I was walking around on it, absolutely fine. I didn't see any issues with it whatsoever. I heard no complaints from players on either game about it. You can hear plenty when you're sidelined. So you hear a lot of chat. So if there was somebody complaining, I'm pretty sure I'd have heard it at some point over the 180 minutes I was there for. So,
well, and the reality is it clearly affected us more than it affected them. Yeah. Mm. If there was an issue with the surface, we were the ones struggling with it, not City at all. Mm. They seemed to be finding it pretty easy other than, yeah, you talked about McLaren having a poor touch at one point, and there are a couple others, but we had some horrendous stuff that I don't think you can just blame on the grass.
I think Melbourne City can blame their final third. That's basically their finishing was atrocious, and they were in plenty of opportunities to score. I think they had something like 16 shots to our 8 or
that. 5 or 6 shots on goal to 0 in the first half, something like that.
Yeah, so it was it's their finishing that was the issue. Their final third play was poor. Yep. Their build-up play was good. Their transition play was decent. But when they finally got towards the box, they were finishing like me, to be honest.
No, they didn't hit the crossbar all the time.
Mm. I didn't always hit the crossbar, mate.
Did you miss a lot as well?
Wide.
it seemed a really, really weird game watching at home just because it was like I was, to be fair, working at the same time. And I'd be looking up going, there's all this excitement, but I'm not seeing a tremendous amount of end product by anyone.
No. Mm-hmm.
And just felt like, okay, what the hell is going on? Not even a game for the neutral in a way. It was just kind of like,
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a really enjoyable game to watch, and I enjoyed watching the replay again today as well. So, yeah, I don't know. It was just it felt like two relatively evenly matched teams having a decent game of football, and they kind of nulled each other out in certain parts, and other parts they, you know, mistakes lead to opportunities and stuff. It's just like a standard good game of football to watch. So,
you know what it felt like to me was when you get two teams that are just trying too hard. They know they've got to step up their game to beat someone else, and they're trying just a little bit hard or trying something a little bit different. And it kind of felt like that to me, just because the mistakes were uncharacteristic from both sides.
Speaking of like doing things slightly differently, and I don't know if this was the case for the whole game, but I noticed Cammy Devlin seemed to be sitting more in the six, and Muddy Steinman was going forward a bit more in the eight.
I agree.
Do we think that might have had a bit of an effect on how the Phoenix were progressing?
Yeah, that's very unusual because normally Matty Steinman
the other way around.
Yeah, he sits back and sometimes wide cover fullbacks. So unless they were looking to hook up the midfield a little more,
he was still pulling wide and helping Tiatafai because obviously Tiatafai was.
But he was a little higher though. It wasn't.
He was much higher.
Yeah,
much much higher. But he was pulling wide right. Maybe that's why
they're playing left
Maybe
right.
Maybe that's why he was playing higher. Because they wanted him to cover Tiatafai specifically, but wanted him to do it higher up the pitch.
Yeah.
Because Tiatafai obviously isn't a right back, and you know, did a serviceable job. But man, he was sucking some big ones when they subbed him off.
Yeah, he's not a small unit. I mean, that's a fullback. You do a lot of running.
He's done, considering how out of position he was playing. I actually think he did a serviceable job.
Yeah, I totally agree. One thing I noticed from the plot map that they do for. Average position, I noticed he was a lot higher up the pitch than Kikache. Like, his average position was basically on about halfway, which is...
Possibly because he's not used to running the line and he's trying to give himself a little more of a head start to get there.
Yeah, maybe. Whereas he certainly doesn't have the gas.
And Kikache's got wheels. That kid is quick, right?
Yeah.
So he can get up and down the line, exactly. So, he's probably just... counterbalancing a weakness in his game at fullback, which wouldn't be seen as his game at centre back.
Yeah, I think the other good thing about him being a centre back is he knows how to turn and get back and cover. I think and scramble the defence, which I think that a lot of defenders, especially fullbacks, wouldn't do well. So yeah, that's true. He had a. I can't think of any glaring horrible mistakes he made.
No, they got him behind him a couple of times.
A couple of
standard errors at corner and cross balls where it's gone over him, where he probably should have positioned himself a bit better. But that wasn't fullback play; that was just normal defensive play that was an issue there. So, yeah, I think he's done a serviceable job. I'm genuinely not surprised he came off when he did. He was crouching in the box after he won that corner. He was crouching in the box like. Just sucking in hard breaths.
Yeah, doing the big long runs for fullbacks is what absolutely murders you. You just do one of those and you're like, why the hell did I do that so early? The rest of the team, no, I mean, as much as we're talking about the individual mistakes, it didn't feel like they did them on the ball rather than defensive mistakes.
Yeah.
It kind of felt like defensively we've not necessarily stepped up a level, but certainly there's been steady improvement the last probably five or six games.
Yeah.
I mean, we're now starting to get those clean sheets or one goal sort of territory, whereas, you know, you think five or six games ago, it was always we were conceding at least one goal.
Well, Perth was an anomaly really, wasn't it?
Yeah,
compared to the other games that have been played around like prior and then this one since, it certainly feels... Five of our team got picked in the team of the week. Now, whilst I think that's excessive, and I also disagree with the people that were picked in each, like of our team, it probably says a lot about how they're performing that they are now viewing us as that kind of a dominance.
Yeah.
I think it was almost as though they were picking them as form up to this point more than form just this week.
Well, I've gone form just this week or perhaps last because of, you know, the Perth game with Hooper getting in. Now, whilst Hooper did play well and he showed that he can actually do 90 minutes now, which is massive for us, he showed that he's not as slow as we initially thought. He started to get some pace back into his game. He's probably dropped a little more size, which is fantastic. And he did play well, but I would have had Ball in the team of the week. Of the two strikers that played, I think Ball had a bigger influence on the game. I actually think Davila had a bigger influence than those three attacking players, and I'd have had him there instead. But, you know, what would I know?
Yeah.
So Hooper's played well. Don't get me wrong. Great assist. Fantastic ball.
Oh, was it?
Yeah. I think the only interesting thing about Hooper, and this may be how they look at it, is I think Hooper probably stepped up the most from his usual performance.
Well,
I think Ball and Davila were pretty similar to how they usually are, you know, whereas Hooper, this was definitely the best performance we've seen from him.
Yeah.
His work rate was so much higher. We got more minutes. He was going wider. He was dropping back. He was, you know, he was doing a lot more stuff off the ball than we've ever seen from him. And what he was doing was reasonably effective. And he has that assist that is just, you know, phenomenal.
That,
assist.
That run, we weren't seeing that from him 2 weeks ago.
No, absolutely not.
Most impressed for me was his high press. Yep. His high press and putting pressure on offensive line,
true.
Which he hasn't been doing.
Yep.
And we commented about him not doing that on the pod. That was in his game this week. So I think it was just, he's obviously now got whatever was niggling him has gone. he's reached match fitness. He's probably only going to get fitter from this point out, but he's already got 90 minutes and playing well. It does mean a change tactically for us, though, because as a transition, we're not going to be anywhere near as quick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, that last 15 to 20 minutes, he wasn't playing as a sole striker, but the performance he put out was textbook lone striker, with the hold-up play, the holding off the man, controlling the ball, finding space, going into corners, shithousery in the 95th minute.
Yeah.
If you're Hamish Watson, you watch that and go, those are the skills and abilities that I need to be showing, because that was excellent lone striker play.
Yeah, to be fair, one thing that I was impressed with that goal, the assist that he put on the plate, as much as we say he's not the quickest guy, he at least held his own with the defender, with the defensive line.
The defender was closing down and was going to get the ball ahead and cross it when he did, and he did have a head start. So I'm not saying he's quick, but he's quick enough.
Yeah, it's quick enough.
20 metres he needs to be to do it.
And his timing's good enough on making the run as well.
Yeah. I mean, hell of a ball to him as well. But just fantastic ball.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. I mean, to play that at all is really good, but then obviously Hooper steps it up another level again on top of that with the ball he puts in. So,
Have you guys seen the full side on angle with watching balls run in?
No, I haven't.
Not completely.
Yeah, so he starts his run basically on our side of the 20-meter circle, in the center circle rather, and he's just basically going from there, and also not particularly quick, but he doesn't ever give it up. He's just like, nah, I'm absolutely wellying it as fast as I can go and gets there. He was never getting any closer, like at a full sprint, he's never getting any closer than, you know, the pullback option. So, you know, fair dues.
But he's called it, and he said to Hooper, put it here, and Hooper's put exactly where he's after.
Oh, well, I honestly felt like Hooper hit his foot rather than ball actually shooting.
Yeah.
It was that much on a plate for him.
It was a lovely finish too, though.
Yeah.
Like between deep defender and keeper, it was just it was a lovely piece of football, possibly one of the nicest team goals we've scored this year.
Yeah, the fact that he didn't even have to break a stride after that full run in makes all the difference, I think, because I think he would have been blowing quite hard, and if he'd had to kind of prop himself, take a half step and then hit it.
Yeah, Jason Hoffman'd it.
Yeah, there's every possibility, but just timed everything beautifully. It was nice. It's good the ball got it too. I mean, he needs a few of those, considering how good he's been playing and how well he's been playing. My bad.
We are not going to call you up for that, man. We are not grammar Nazis.
I know, but still. Yeah, in writing, it would have been a big red line.
I'm off duty.
Yeah.
Pat's not here. He'd have called you on it.
Yeah, true. But yeah, how well he's been playing. He deserves a goal. He deserves a few goals.
Yeah.
Really.
I think it was one of those goals as well. Like with him, he just, there was no time for him to think about it. He was just running to get there and putting it away. It's when he's thinking about it. It's when he's kind of done a bit of the work and then he goes for the shot. That's when I've noticed he tends to kind of scuff the ones that you think, oh, but you've done the hard bit, the easy bit's putting it in. When he's not having to think about it, that's when he's really effective.
It's instinctive striker.
Yeah.
It's almost as if the A-League is too slow for him, which is slightly ironic because
given
the pace he runs
at. Not that fast.
Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I think that's bang on. As soon as he engages the brain, it's like, whoop. Yeah, maybe a bit Hamish Watson's problem too.
Always with the digs with you.
Oh, mate. You know it. Did we learn anything from this game that we didn't already know? Or was anything clarified in your heads? I'm curious about this one.
I think we're seeing the best of Hooper and he's only going to get better. I think he's obviously getting match fit. I think that in that article he was talking the other week where, you know, he was basically saying he's here to start. He doesn't want to be on the bench. I wonder if a few off the bench runs have got that hunger in him as well, that he's like, no, I want to show that I can do the business here. I'm in a much lower league than I'm used to, and I should be banging them in. I want to be banging them in. And he's I think, going to start showing us that, which is going to be fantastic.
Matty Steinman.
We learned that he never expects to score a goal.
No.
Well, he's at dinner. He's like, surely it's off. Surely it's off. It's got to be off.
There's nobody
there. Oh, no, I'll celebrate now.
To be fair, he's obviously got a level of match awareness that a lot of the refereeing staff could have done with, but, you know, it is what it is.
To be fair to Sarah Jones, she would have seen the deflection off the wall, which puts them onside, and not the deflection off Hooper's ass, which puts them offside.
I thought they were offside from the
They're offside of the free kick anyway. So. But the thing is, the ARs are told in that scenario,
keep
the flag down, let the VAR check.
Yeah.
The thing that surprised me about that was how long the VAR took to decide it was offside, because I agree, there's three players who are offside at the free kick. So they're still offside when it touches the wall, and they're certainly offside when it touches Hooper. So it doesn't really matter which touch you want to look at, they're offside.
Yeah.
And so it should have been much, much quicker than how long they took to decide that it is offside.
They're looking up the rule book. They just Googled what is offside and tried to work it from that.
Yeah. Let me come back to my original point. Matty Steinman, the team is better with him in it.
Yes.
God, yes.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah. As much as it's very hard to quantify quite, like you see his defensive work of screening, and if you're paying close attention to him, it's kind of like, oh, yeah, he does a lot of defensive screening. But his passes, admittedly, he does get the odd one wrong, but he adds a lot of option through that midfield.
I think he gives a good option for the defenders to play out to. Cam Devlin looks better when he's on. Davila looks better when he's on. Davila looking good takes some pressure off ball, you know, like that.
Yep.
Everything works better when he's on the field. It just does. And whether or not he's directly touching it, just having that option there creates the space for those others around him to be doing what they do best.
Yep.
So it's a no-brainer for me. And it's fantastic to see stories today about him wanting to stick around.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed we can get that done.
Oh yeah, the fact that he's put it out on paper.
A must have, and if he's that keen, we should be signing him on.
Yeah, it shouldn't even be a question. Like we are so much better with him on the pitch.
Yep, totally. The fact that Cam Devlin seems to be keeping up the level that he's done for a young fella like that is amazing to me. I would have expected a kid that young, this early in his career, to have the odd little dip and glitch. But I mean, he's been consistent. He's been like 7.5. 8 out of 10 every week.
I saw him described as a pit bull this week. And I'm like,
more staffy than pit bull.
He is tenacious in a tackle and isn't afraid to throw himself into it. But he seems to get his timing right.
Yep.
He's certainly got the, not just the timing, the speed right. So everything is there. I mean, if he was, you know, if
his technique is good too. He doesn't just fly into a tackle. That's what I like. Yeah. Little guys, you tend to see them just, if they're going in fast,
throwing their weight around.
They just try and go hell for leather.
I mean, the rumour that might feed into the pit bull thing is he's pretty lippy on the field too.
Oh,
I understand.
You can
chips
hear
away
him.
A lot.
Yeah.
And so I suspect you put in a few, you know, hard but good challenges and you're chatting away to some, you know, some reasonably well-known players. I can see why you get that kind of attack dog vibe because, you know, and I don't think he'd shy away from that. I think he's probably pretty happy if that's his role given the players around him. He'll take that.
He's a lovely kid, though.
Yeah.
Off the field, he's absolutely lovely.
Oh, I bet he's loving it. we should probably remark that he's not just a defensive player. His all-round footballing, I mean, his positional play is pretty decent, and his on-the-ball play is also good.
I think he's the perfect eight. He is the perfect eight. He's got a background as a 10. He's shown he can play as a 6. But his strength for me is that he can break up play and do tackling, but he's also got really good offensive distribution as well. His positional play is good to give outlets for the defence, and then he can find that next pass, which tends to be the right option.
Yeah.
It's very, very good. I think we are, as a team, have the highest pass completion rate in the league.
80% or something like that.
Exactly, and that says a lot for the guys playing in that central midfield role.
Yeah. I mean, it's something that we really haven't seen for the Knicks since Timmy Brown days. Just a really very solid spine. And I think it kind of shows that, one, we're more consistent. We don't get turned over for shitty little goals anymore because we're controlling the ball a lot better and controlling the pace of the game more. I'm really enjoying it at the moment. I can't overstate that.
It's
nice watching good football from...
We're playing good football. We're winning games.
And we're looking decent doing it.
If we win on Friday, we've got a chance at second. That says absolutely everything right now.
The FFA aren't shitting all over us. They're actually talking us up.
They view
us as one of the most exciting teams in the league at the moment. They're talking us up, which is fantastic. I mean,
probably helps that we bent over backwards to help Sydney get their derby in the right spot, so might have won us a few brownie points as well. So they might be laying off us for a couple of weeks.
Well, we should probably cover that in detail. So obviously the Sydney Derby got postponed due to inclement weather and not a fire this time, actual rain and the pitch getting waterlogged.
Rain is a
very, understatement, isn't it?
Statement for that. It was
euphemism.
Phenomenally lot of rain.
Yeah. What was it, 150 mils overnight or something?
Over 36 hours they had some, like it was literally
it was more than that.
Over a metre and a half. It was just ridiculous.
Yeah. So yeah, fair enough, it got rescheduled, but in someone's infinite wisdom, Vox, it was obviously decided that a Sydney Derby is a better TV experience, I would say.
Better crowd pool. End of story. People are going to watch the Sydney Derby over watching Sydney versus Wellington.
Yeah, well, no, the thing that gets me about this is why did it have to be us that got messed with here? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. There were better options around. We're a team that actually has to travel a long way for this. You know, I can understand that the decision was made quite early on, and sensibly, I would say, that they weren't going to play the Sydney Derby as the midweek catch-up.
Yeah, totally
agree. They were going to play it on a Friday or a Saturday night and get a crowd to the Sydney Derby. Fair enough. I suspect, though, looking at the full draw, there were better spots you could move a midweek fixture than moving our game only a few weeks out. You know, a Newcastle Jets or a Mariners who are already really close to Sydney, there's no travel, there's none of that, makes a lot more sense as a midweek fixture than us having to play three times in 8 days.
And not all three away, having to come home in between. That's the killer for me.
No, home game is the first one.
Well,
on the Sunday. Or the South, I can't remember which day it is, and then it's the Wednesday, and then the Sunday.
Sunday, yeah.
Oh, sorry, I stand corrected.
Yeah, I think it's Sunday, Wednesday,
Sunday.
It might be Saturday, Wednesday, Sunday. Yeah, then,
because the last game is definitely the Sunday afternoon against the Jets.
But so to me, it just seems annoying that we're the one who got picked on out of this. It feels much easier to have rescheduled something. You've got both teams based in Sydney, pick something with one of those teams playing another New South Wales team, and reshuffle that to a midweek. It just makes sense to me.
I don't know what Sydney's schedule is, but there's also possibly consideration around when their other home games are and when they've got Asian Cup, Asian Champions League issues as well. So there might not have been, within the next month, anything else that is better. But before the end of the season, they definitely will.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and there's no reason this needs to be replayed immediately. It just doesn't. Doing it with more warning, particularly since this is screwing a few fans who are travelling. There are some who are flying over, and fair enough. It's one of the few times you could get back-to-back New South Wales games into a trip. I had looked at this trip myself. I'm glad I had picked Melbourne earlier in the season instead, because otherwise I'd have accommodation and flights booked.
Yep.
Yeah, it is disappointing that it's been rescheduled quite so quickly, but yeah, if this is the last
later
time
in the season, especially maybe over Easter, I think Easter would have been the perfect time to do it. The Sydney Derby thrown there.
Yeah, actually, that's a good point.
It's two months out. Gives people, not that many people have planned their travel around that period of time. Right?
Is there a big derby for Sydney? Or
don't know Sydney's schedule, but there are plenty of windows around Easter you could do. You could shift the game earlier in the round and then play that at the end. Play a Friday and a Monday. That's possible for Sydney to do. So yeah, it's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, it is disappointing that it's us again. I guess maybe we're just a bit prickly about it because these sorts of things. Yeah. Why always us, in the words of Mario Bell.
Well, and particularly a season where we're finally doing well and it feels like the scheduling is going to put some pressure on us that, you know, we I wouldn't say dominated, but certainly rocked Sydney earlier in the season when they looked unbeatable. We made them look beatable.
Yep.
Now we're going to be facing them at a time where we're going to have some real schedule pressure on us. And actually that's 3 points we could be taking there, but I think it'll be a lot harder now.
Yep. Yeah, and all it would take is, you know, an injury or two because of the extra load, and our season could get the wobbles. I mean, we're, you know, a very new side, and as far as depth goes, you know, we don't have a tremendous amount of depth like for like replacements. It's really only at six, I think, that we do have someone that we could just go, actually, Alex Rufer, fine, slot in.
Yep. However, as Cam alluded to earlier, that there must have been some discussion with the club around this.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed they've got a hell of a favour out of this. That's the only thing that could be going well. You'd certainly hope so, right? Like, previous seasons, I'd just be assuming the FFA were just shitting all over us. Now I'm assuming at least there was a chat and hopefully we agreed to this with something pretty good in return.
I know we agreed to it.
Yeah.
Like, I do know that because that was reported in the article about the change.
Yeah.
The club was discussed with the club and they agreed to the change. So it would be nice to know what
I don't think we ever will, but in previous, you know, positions like the, you know, taking our license off us. They might not have even, you know, it might have been a formality of a discussion rather than an actual discussion. We're moving this game, you better agree, or you're definitely not here next season.
What wouldn't have been
the position they could take now, but it would have been a position a few years ago.
Probably it could be something as simple as we'll give you schedule priority in next year's competition.
Yep.
You know, so you want your Sunday games at 5 o'clock, you get your Sunday games at 5 o'clock.
Yep.
Stuff like that. And it makes a difference because there's a lot of money on the line for the Sydney Derbies.
Yeah, fair enough. We should probably get on and cover the rest of the round.
Sure. So the round started with Adelaide United hosting Central Coast Mariners. They won the game 2-0. Goals to George Blackwood in the 82nd minute and Mohamed Touré in the 84th minute. Becoming the youngest scorer in A-League history, I believe.
The Blackwood goal? He's hit that okay.
Worth a look, is it?
Yeah, he has cracked that top corner.
Nice. Then our game was second. Obviously, it's a short round. Next game was Western Sydney 1 versus Newcastle Jets 1. Western Sydney opened the scoring in the 5th minute with Mitchell Duke, and Newcastle levelled up in the 74th minute with Matthew Miller. Italiano has made a fantastic save.
Came out.
That was brilliant work. Yeah. I personally would have given that the save of the round.
Yeah, there was one.
I thought that was better.
There was one of Curto's as well. He's come out and absolutely smothered a shot, which I thought was pretty decent as well.
Yeah, I don't think it was as good.
I thought Italiano's was better, but still. That point for Newcastle, very big for them.
Yeah, puts them obviously
off the bottom.
Clear of Mariners.
Well, a point.
Still clear. last game of the round was the one that's important for us, was Western United 0, Brisbane Roar 1. Goal was scored by Mladenovic in the 61st minute. That had a massive impact on the table around 6th spot. A draw would have been ideal for us because it would have kept Brisbane just that little bit farther behind. Now they're within a game.
Yeah.
And it does put 5 teams within 5 points into second place.
Yeah, it's massive. A bit of a long jam, but there is a bit of a gap opening up between Brisbane and Western United.
We are 6 points clear of 7th. And for Brisbane are 4 points clear of 7th, which is Western United, who we do play this weekend. And then Western Sydney are another 3 points behind them, which that does surprise me considering our performances against them and how they've played against us this season, that Western Sydney are quite so far down the table.
I think the problem is that they're 10% below most clubs and they're just managing to not quite, you know, get their best performances out and not quite get points. Mm. So they're just a little bit off every single time. Yeah. So they've been quite consistent if you want to look at it positive light.
Well, the strength, Perth is the team that's probably in the best position to push forward.
Yep.
Scarily, Sydney have played less games than everybody else. They've only played 15 games and they're on, you're a dick because we didn't call you out. You are a dick. Sydney played 15 games for 40 points. Melbourne City played 18 games with 30 points in second place. Perth have got 2 games on Melbourne City, and only 1 point behind them. So they win those games, they could easily go second, and I think they will. It's probably about right. Perth obviously had a very poor start to the season due to off-field considerations, and they seem to have come back quite well with that. So I think they are probably the second best team in the league. And
they're starting a new circus currently, though. So
of course,
we'll see how that goes.
Well, that could have all sorts of wonderful impacts on the club moving forward. But I actually think Western United obviously still have a chance at the playoffs. But I think the top 6 now probably is going to be the top 6.
Yeah, there's not. If Western United lose against us this weekend, I think those chances slip away. Yeah.
We should probably. Now get onto our news section because Western United has featured a bit in the gossip section at least. Reports are coming out that Rudan's lost the dressing room.
I mean, just first up, huge shout out to those Brisbane fans.
all of their work in that game.
I'm not going to go into the details of it, but what phenomenal stuff from them, and they deserve
that is some great
all
trolling.
Of the praise they were getting across social media. Yeah. Just fantastic stuff.
Great trolling. There was a report coming out of, I think it was Soccer Stoppage Time, that basically saying that
he's lost the dressing room.
That's the direct reason that McDonald, Chapman and Gullum all left.
All left, yeah.
And apparently Diamante's put in an ultimatum to
the board.
Yeah. So, wow, if that's even remotely true, wow.
Well, and then throw in the additional kind of smoke of rumors of unpaid wages and stuff as well on top of that. It all gets pretty problematic for them, given they still haven't started their stadium that was meant to be started by now, and there's no sign of that starting yet. They're still saying they haven't even submitted the consent documentation for it. So, I mean, there's some real strife going on there if any of that's even remotely true, let alone if all of it is completely true. So,
yeah totally. What is the other news? The MacArthur, one of the owners of MacArthur has sold out. I think it's his entire share, wasn't it?
That's my belief, yeah.
Yeah, he's sold his entire share already, which is interesting. Someone's obviously quite keen.
Well, it has several maybe implications. It could be, you know, just him abandoning ship, and sale doesn't necessarily mean any money exchanged hands. He might have sold for a huge loss and could be bailing on what he thinks is a sinking ship. Or it could be that there's significant interest and he's like, well, you know what, I don't even need to stay involved to be able to make a return here. And that's fantastic news. If there are people coming in with, you know, some pockets and are keen on investing, great. So it's hard to know what to read into that other than there's some stuff going on there.
Yep. And obviously we have the whole Perth interest.
Have you read the statement?
Which one? They're all
the one on the
insane
website that reads like a stream of consciousness and goes into
the
all
most
sorts
recent
of
one
details.
After he went, oh, hang on, it's everyone's telling me this is slightly dodge. No, it's all fine. That one, yes, you're nodding in agreement.
Why don't you look that one up for us, Ella? Let's just read this. It might be worth a couple of minutes worth of airtime.
Whoever the London geezer is, he obviously can talk Eskimos into ice. Yeah.
If there is ever a textbook definition of geezer, take a look at this guy.
Yeah. Well, they've managed to get a lot of venture capital money behind their thing. So that there is money that exists within their business. Whether they're pissing it all against a wall, who knows? I mean, the future certainly looks dicey at best for their venture, but they have managed to bring in a decent amount of capital to fund it to start with. And admittedly, you know, cryptocurrency was bringing in all the venture capitalists for a while there, but man, they look very scary in terms of their particular outfit.
Yeah, there was a saying going around that crypto brings all the VCs to the yard, it definitely feels a bit like that. Because
so
if
Tony
you look
Sage
at this,
sells for a profit now and then buys for a pittance when it all goes tits up in 2 years' time and gets the club back again.
Well, this all is he selling for cash? That's the real question.
Yeah, he actually say that. He said that he'd been told about cryptocurrency, but he wanted cash. Like, that was one of his original statements. And I'm like, if it ain't good enough for you, why do you think it's good enough for
But I'm pretty sure part of this deal won't be cash. There might be some cash involved, but I'm pretty sure as part of this deal, if it is to go ahead and it still requires some FFA approval, and there's a lot of stuff that means this probably won't happen. But if it does, surely a part of what he's getting here is shares in that company.
There's an
absolute no-brainer is that probably the majority of what he's receiving here is a stake in the company. And if that company is worth nothing.
Yeah, I'm not sure why I would be. Every alarm bell I have rings. And then I watched the video of the geezer, I can't remember his name, and every alarm bell just got loud. Can you remember his name?
No, I don't remember his
but
name.
But the sheepskin line leather jacket sitting there with his iPod,
his aviators on. And
in the back of
London accent and the whole thing, like all you're missing is a cigar and a little bit of whiskey driving along, getting your chauffeur. Oh, honestly, it was just so bad.
It just needs a couple of Guy Ritchie snapshots.
Yes, exactly that. It's a stereotypical East London person. It was phenomenal.
So there's two really great statements. One is on the 14th and the other was from the 17th. They're both wonderful. I'm just trying to decide which one. Where do we want to start?
Read the latest one.
Just read the latest one. That's fine. Just so we can have a laugh, because let's face it, this stuff. I mean, if it comes off, it's great for the league. If it doesn't come off,
I mean, it starts off well. Dear Perth Glory family, I promised an update, and after almost 2 days in London and a crash course on all things crypto, one thing I have found out is you can in capital letters, teach an old dog new tricks. I have also learned the sports industry and the cryptocurrency industry have more in common than what I realised, especially in football. And he goes on to say a few more things. Apparently, some of the biggest clubs in the world, like Barca, Manchester City, Juventus, Atletico Madrid, Bayern Munich, have also already adopted crypto in some capacity. These clubs and their fans are going right through that learning curve right now, so it's good to know what company Perth Glory are keeping in this.
As a long-time Bayern fan, this is the first I am hearing of it. Long-time Bayern fan.
He does clarify that he's certainly not a crypto expert, nor will he intervene with the LFE cash tokenization strategy, as that is clearly separate from the LFE football group.
Is it?
He then goes on to say that you must remember the LFE crypto business is one small part of the overall strategy in creating a truly global football group. He says, with regards to the FFA, I can confirm the FFA is aware of the sale process and LFE PGFC will adhere to all the questions they have already provided and give transparent responses. To suggest that I did not communicate with the FFA about a transaction is simply not true, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As I have said many times before, the club is like my fourth child. I would never, again, capital letters, do anything to harm its future or its growth. If anything, I want to keep growing the Glory family, and so on and so forth. Regards, Tony.
Yep. Yep, 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 yep. Yeah.
Let's see how this one pans out, shall we?
Yeah. Yeah, in hindsight, this is going to be a very, very interesting watch.
Unfortunately, of course, if it goes tits up, that could be quite bad for Perth and quite bad for the league.
Yeah.
So let's hope it doesn't go tits up.
No.
Or if it does, Tony Sage is in a position to buy the club back again.
Well, hopefully he's made a bit of money from the sale.
Yeah.
So we should probably get on to the W League, as we have spent a lot of time talking about the Perth Glory and LOLs.
I mean, it was a good weekend for the Perth Glory, to be fair, in the W League.
I love that qualification, in the W League.
Yes. Yeah, so there were four games this week, and they all got sort of pushed out slightly because of the Olympic qualifiers going on Thursday night. So first game up, we had the Sydney Derby on Saturday, and that was one. The last one, obviously played at the end of last year, Western Sydney Wanderers with their new American imports and whatnot. They shellacked Sydney 5-0. That did not happen again. Sydney FC won 3-0.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a good turnaround.
It's a very good turnaround. It's probably more a reflection of how the wheels are starting to fall off a little bit for Western Sydney.
How many players have they lost so far?
So Denise O'Sullivan was all right. She's gone. Her guest contract finished. That was always on the cards. They were expecting Lynn Williams back from US Women's National Team duty. She did, in fact, come back to Sydney, but to inform them of her desire to terminate the contract because she wanted to focus on getting into the Olympic squad for the States. They've got the She Believes Cup in a couple of weeks. So I think, reading between the lines, none of this has been officially said, but I would assume a bit of pressure was put on her to head straight back. Like I say, She Believes in a couple of weeks. So that's a four-team tournament with, I think it's England, Japan, and Spain. And that's just kind of part of the build-up work. She had a really great qualifying campaign, you know, scored quite a few goals and whatnot. So from her perspective, you can totally understand. From Western Sydney's perspective, they're a little bit fucked.
Yeah. To be blunt. Probably a little bit fucked off too.
Yeah, because that came on the last day of the transfer window.
Oh.
So, you know, that, not ideal.
Yeah, that's suboptimal.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, goals were scored for Sydney by Veronica Latsko after 66 seconds, just to, you know, set the tone. Ellie Brush scored on the 14th. Kristen Hamilton was sent off for the Wanderers. And then I cannot find the last goal scorer. But, yeah, finished 3-0.
Yep.
Pretty convincing game. And then we headed to Perth versus Brisbane Roar. Perth Glory beat them 4-2. In this game, the Roar had all their Matildas back. So it was played on Sunday. So three games played on Sunday at the same time. And yeah, Perth Glory, who have been sort of not been doing so well this season since Sam Kerr and whatnot have left. Brisbane Roar obviously trying to get into the playoffs. And yeah, that's been made a lot more difficult this time around.
Whatnot's a big loss.
Yeah.
Couldn't help myself.
Canberra United beat Adelaide United 3-1. That's kind of fairly reflective of table positions, I think, for Canberra as well. Heather Garriott, the coach, her contract's not being renewed, so Canberra will be looking for a new coach for next season. It'll be interesting to kind of see how that develops. I think she's been there for about 3 years now, but sort of had come to the point of,
new
directions.
I wonder if one of the new potential new franchises is in the offing, which we will discuss later on in our Patreon section.
And then last but not least, the Melbourne Derby, or the Kiwi Derby, depending on what way you want to look at it. Fairly one-way traffic, 4-0 to Melbourne City.
Gow.
Yeah.
Gow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So with City, obviously, they get one more point from their next two games and they hold the premiership plate. back for them for the first time in a little while.
Mm.
But yeah.
Well, I'm sure that'll ease the pressure on their flagship enterprise in the Citigroup.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. We should kick on, I guess, to the Handy Prem. Not a full round.
No, only three games this weekend. First game was Southern United 2, Waitakere 1. Goals for Southern to Cody Brock and Cam McKenzie, and to Waitak for Gerard Gibbett.
Close.
Thanks. The second game, Phoenix Rezies 2 against Hamilton Wanderers 1. The Rezies scored all the goals in this game. The ones in the two column were to Callan Elliott and to Riley Boudoir in the 89th minute. Very much, I don't know if you watched this on telly, but for me yep. it was very much against the run of play. The scoring was against the run of play,
yep.
and then it was all Hamilton from there on out.
Cool. Really nice goal for Callan Elliott, though. That was a nice little yes. team goal. Couple really nice passes to open it up, but as you say, completely against the run. They've yep. been under the pump completely the game. Until that happened. Yep. Yeah.
And the own goal was a little unlucky because I think Jones and goal had actually had it covered, but Liam McGinn got his foot to it and managed to deflect it past him. So.
He asked not to come back.
Yeah, pretty yeah, much.
Go back to the senior team.
But it was a massive, massive, massive win for the yeah. Wanderers, obviously. It was huge. And the final game of the round was Auckland City 5 versus Canberra United Dragons 1. Goals to Auckland City went to Emiliano Tade in the 7th minute, Brian Kaltak in the 14th, Maya Bevan 32nd, Jordan Vale in the 35th, and Alfie Rogers in the 43rd to make it 5-0 at halftime. Then Aaron Clapham scored the only goal in the second half in the 78th minute to make it 5-1. That really is the manager saying at halftime, let's go out and win the second half, boys.
Yeah, Vorman said that Clapham goal was quite decent too.
I haven't seen any of
yeah.
that. The only Handy Prem I saw in the weekend was the game I shot. So
yeah, fair enough. We should probably touch on the OFC. I know that we hit.
Well, I was going to say, we've still got the round coming up this weekend.
Oh, thanks. Sorry, mate.
Before you jump too far ahead. Of interest is there's no game this round in Wellington. Team Wellington, the only Wellington team playing, and they are playing away at Canterbury 4 o'clock on Sunday. Canterbury being the bottom team, this being effectively a must-win for T-Dubs, with Waitak and Easts starting to close down very significantly on them.
Cool. OFC, Eastern Suburbs, had a game today. 2-2.
Yeah, they were down 2-1.
2-1.
Got the equaliser and added time, I think.
Yeah. Opposition, and I can't for the life of me remember who it was, got put down to 10 men as their previous game against Takari did as well. So, yeah, that's kept them in the hunt, I think. It sounds like in their side of the draw that there are two teams on 4, two teams on 0. So, yeah, they're in with the hunt, I think, is a nice way of putting it. But
well, if that's the case, that puts them through. If there's two teams on 4 and two teams on 0,
I think they'll both there's play. One. They'll oh, yeah, true, because there's only, yeah, they'll only get 3 points. Good point.
They'll be through the next round. They'll be playing at the top of the table.
That's where you do payrolls, mate. You can count.
No, I did math at school, mate.
Yeah,
that's I did why too. I can count.
But, yeah. Apart from that, I think that's pretty much us for the week. The upcoming game for the Knicks.
Yeah, we probably should cover off the next round yeah. for the Phoenix, really, shouldn't we?
So probably should cover the whole A-League.
More than likely. Who made you host again? Pat, that's right.
You're A-League.
Yeah.
Okay. Remember?
Am I?
Yeah.
I am the A-League.
You are the A-League.
I am the A-League.
You are football.
I am creating A-League.
Football.
Yeah. Cam is creating A-League. So this Friday night, the Knicks kick off the next round against Western United at Stadium. Kickoff is at 7:15. Obviously, return of Rudan.
Return of the Roots.
Part two. The third time we played them this season. I think we're likely to see Jura, obviously. They have gone off the boil since they played here and since
the rumours started circulating.
Rumours started circulating and stuff. They've really had a significant fall away in form after they started the season quite well. I think they were sitting up in like third or fourth at one stage, and now they're sitting in seventh, and it's just that early season form that's kept them in contact.
Yep.
If Roots has lost the dressing room, there may be some significant changes in the team that plays here. Obviously, they've lost three of their players from the first game of the season anyway, and if Diamante isn't that keen on playing,
I don't know about that, because he's a very professional player. Yeah. He might look a bit loose, but he is.
I think the reality is as well, looking, you know, we said it at the start of the season in our previews around them that they don't have the depth, and they still don't. They've lost a few of those kind of frontline guys, but they really don't have much depth behind it. I think even if there are serious ructions between the players and Rudan, I don't know that he can afford to drop anyone from his matchday squad, and I think they probably know it. So I think the reality is, even if that is a thing, you probably still see basically the same players out there. Guys like Berisha and Diamante and, you know, that you can't afford to drop. They need points. So if it is true that that's going on, I think you still see the same team. I think the attitudes we've seen on the fields from some of those guys recently, like Berisha when he got subbed off in that game, and, you know, the last few weeks we've seen similar kind of stuff from him. I wouldn't be surprised if there is some falling out between them, but he can't not play him. And guys like Berisha and Diamante and that all want to play anyway, so they're not going to say, I refuse to play. Rudan's not going to drop them. So it's a bit of a standstill until the board decide to do anything, or, you know, someone actually falls on their sword.
So that's Friday's game. Saturday, 7 p.m. The Roar hosts the Glory. That could be a bit of a stumbling block for the Roar, you'd have to think. Might do us a favour if Glory won.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a reason why you didn't cover the other Friday night game.
Is there another Friday night game? There is two. Sorry, mate. Yeah, Western United Wanderers versus Adelaide. That should be a good game.
That should, actually. Adelaide aren't losing. They aren't drawing, I should say. They are winning or losing. So if they turn up and play well, it could be good.
It's getting to do a die time for Wanderers. They need to put out a performance.
They really do.
If they turn out some of the shit they've shown recently, they'll lose this to Adelaide comfortably. But if they step up like they really need to, I think that's quite an entertaining game.
They've got like nine games left and they are 8 points outside the six. So if they want a chance, they have to score some 3 points.
Yep. Yeah. I think that is a winnable game for them, despite that. I mean, Adelaide, as you say, they are capable of losing games.
And if they turn up and play well, they've got it. If they don't, Western Sydney could easily win that game. And that'd be great for us, by the way. We want Western Sydney to win that game.
Yeah, oh, hell yeah.
Because that would put us up into fourth on goal difference.
Yep. It really gives us a chance at third.
Yeah, second. Goal difference, we can go ahead and second place.
I'm going to be realistic and say that we're not going to catch Perth and Sydney.
Perth will all be behind us. They play later.
Yeah, I know. Long term, mate. Long term. You know what I'm talking about.
He doesn't care about a live ladder. He cares about the actual ladder coming into the season.
I'm going live ladder, and on the live ladder, we will be second if we beat Western United by 3 goals.
Yeah, right. Okay. The late game on Saturday, the Jets hosting Victory. So this is kind of an interesting one from the table perspective, I think. If Jets can start getting climbing up, and whether Victory can actually right their ship a little bit.
Well, Victory on 16 points, Jets on 14. Very much also ran as the season. So Victory has really fallen away. Kurtz did
ACL
a job on them
this week as well. We've seen A-League teams in the past struggle when they hit that ACL part of the season,
especially when they don't have depth.
And they lost against whoever they played.
Tokyo, was it?
Yeah.
They apparently did not look good. It was basically Rojas and Toivonen who looked good and the rest of the team.
So landing back in and playing this game, and the Jets, I'm not going to say they're on a run of form, but they're coming off a win and a draw. It's improvement. So they might have some confidence and might be able to do something here. It's rare they'd be battling out this part of the table with Victory, so what better chance you have?
Oh, yeah, they like sticking it to Victory. They probably owe them one after the final.
Yep.
Was it 2 years ago?
Yes.
Yep. And the final game of the round is the Mariners hosting Sydney. You've got to be thinking that's one-way traffic.
Oh, you'd think so.
Yeah, I would go. That's probably going to be pretty one-sided.
Yep.
Yeah.
I mean, Sydney also coming off ACL. I think they play tonight, maybe, or did they play last night as well?
They play.
I think they played tonight.
Did they? I thought it was last night as well. But Either way, it's now-ish.
Yeah, they've got a game this week. They might be struggling similar, but the Mariners aren't coming off a similar bounce in form.
No.
But they could really do with some points, and they'll be at home, I believe. So, you know, what better time to stick it to an old rival than win this one? So,
yeah, it would be nice. I don't see it
happening as much as I see the Jets plausibly getting something out of that, but I'm sure it'll be a game their players will be trying to get up for. Guys like Matt Simon and that certainly be talking up. This is, you know, this is an important one, and one they can go out there and get something out of, but maybe 10 minutes in, that hope might have gone.
Yeah, I think so. But also, it doesn't really affect the table.
No.
But the Victory Newcastle game does, that Adelaide Western Sydney game does, and ours versus...
I mean, Mariners and Jets, neither of them want a wooden spoon. So in terms of that, those games matter a lot, but not to anyone else.
Yeah. I think that is fair and probably a good place to wrap it up. Thank you for listening, and thanks to us for actually doing something. I don't know.
You're as bad at doing outros as Patrick ever was.
I know.
You just go, thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Yeah,
I mean, can you practice that?
Just stopping after thanks for listening would have been fine, but he's like, I need more words. Oh, no, these words are terrible.
So we'll try again, shall we? Thank you for listening. We'll catch you again next week. You try.
No, that's good enough. Nice.
He's not the host.
I'm not the host.
You can be the outro host.
Yeah, because that's a thing. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Outros quick.
Still undefeated at Eden Park brings you.
Let's move the next Eden Park brings you.
95 minutes of. Fuck, I forgot his name. Gary Hooper. I was going to say Graham.
Graham Hooper brings you.